This is Joe Francica, Editor-in-Chief of Directions Magazine. The interview that follows is with Tim Lorello, Senior Vice President and Chief Marketing Officer for Telecommunications Systems. I spoke with Tim about TCS's technology and how they were engaged in pioneering some of the early efforts for enhanced 911 location technology and to help carriers comply with the Federal Communications Commission mandate to put a precise position on cellular calls. We also discussed the value chain for LBS, how that's evolving in these next few years. We'll pick up the interview with Tim discussing how 911 has really had a positive effect on the entire market for location-based services.
We like to point out the fact that E911 has been the primary use of location and is the first main use of location here in the U.S. on mobile phones.
Right.
It's a good example. You know, I mean, it's a life-saving service, obviously, and so as a result, it sort of puts location in a very positive light in the very first entree. So it's a nice comparative to use anytime when we talk about it, it works out well.
Right, and I know that has been TCS's focus for a few years.
Yes, yeah. In fact, we pioneered the way that wireless could work with E911.
Right.
So the whole E911 infrastructure is built around a home with a phone in it. So, you know, phone number maps the street address essentially is the way all those thousands and thousands of public safety answering points work. And so when the mobile phone was introduced in the 90s, you know, we came up with an approach that would actually allow the public safety answering point to work just as it did today without making any changes, but be able to handle the mobile phone and the introduction of the mobile phone and the fact that the phone's location was no longer tied to a specific address any longer.
Right.
It was complicated, but it was necessary because you just couldn't expect every, you know, 6,000 of these answering points to change overnight.
Yeah, can you just go into a little bit about that technology? Because you know, I think people take it for granted a little bit, and so you know, I would appreciate just a brief background. I mean, I'd love to know more about the platform that you're using and how you arrive at a location.
The way E911 was deployed, it came in two stages or two phases, as they called it. You know, the first phase really dealt with cell site sector.
Right.
So the precise location really wasn't available, but we were able to pass the information to the public safety answering point about the cell site sector from which the caller was calling. And so that gave them enough information to be able to focus on how to dispatch emergency services, you know, to the site with interaction with the user. But ultimately where we wanted to take this, where public safety wanted to take this, is they wanted to be able to get a precise location fix within 50 to 150 meters. And that was what was called phase two and is now available, you know, nationwide with all the major carriers. And effectively, I'll just sort of walk you through how a 911 call works without mobile, and then we'll introduce the mobile concept.
Is phase two completely implemented by most of the carriers at this point?
Yes.
It is.
Most of the carriers have deployed it. The main ones that have not are the tier three carriers who are still wrestling with mostly the GSM carriers, because they really were faced with trying to deploy a fairly expensive upgrade to their infrastructure in order to be able to handle services, because the CDMA carriers were able to buy handsets that could, you know, have GPS chips in them.
Right.
The GSM carriers still didn't have that available to them, and so their only other choices were to do some sort of infrastructure upgrade, which could be fairly expensive for them.
Which is at the base station?
Yes, exactly. Base station upgrade, where you do triangulation from the base station.
Right.
Though there's other techniques that have come out since then, based on fingerprinting techniques and you know, other types of techniques that were used for fraud detection, that also were proven to be fairly useful on the location front. But I think everybody is still considered that the GPS approach has been the one that provides the most precise location.
Right.
And so, thankfully, that's coming. The handsets are now starting to come out into the marketplace, though they may be, most of them are going to be probably tied to the, you know, the 3G UMTS world, but some of them will be available on the GSM handsets over time as well. So I'll take a step back. As I was mentioning, the whole 911 infrastructure was tied to, you know, basically what we call a database approach, where you take a phone number and you basically you look it up in a database and you get a street address back. And the way 911 works, you sort of need three elements to make 911 work. You need the location of the caller. You have to route the call to the right PSAP, and there's a public safety answering point or PSAP.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yep.
And there's 6,100 of them around the country. So it's, you know, getting the location is important, obviously, because you got to figure out which one of those 6,100 PSAPs the call goes to. And then the final step is you need to automatically route the information or deliver the information to the public safety answering point in real time as the call is progressing, you know, with that PSAP. So I like to say, you know, you need to locate, route, and deliver. Those are the sort of the three steps that are involved in any 911 call. For wireline, it was fairly straightforward because you had the phone number, and basically you look it up in a database to get the street address, and so therefore you have a location of the caller, and you use that street address location to route the call, and then you deliver that street address location to the public safety answering point. It was pretty straightforward. In fact, in many cases, you didn't even need to look up the street address because it was a fixed, you know, line coming into the public switch network. They basically could just do simple routing techniques inside the switch to get the call to the right PSAP.
Right.
So the entire country's E911 infrastructure was built around this simple routing concept, simple database lookup concept, and deliver that location street address to the PSAP. When you have wireless, now you have this phone that has a phone number, obviously, but isn't tied to a specific location any longer. And so looking it up in a database doesn't work anymore. And so we created what we call the network approach. And what that network approach does is we use information from the network in real time. In this case, it's the cell site and sector information of the network to basically route the call to the right PSAP based on that cell site and sector. And in order to do that, you have to be part of the network. You have to. We've basically inserted ourselves into the middle of an E911 call. So when the call is placed, a message is sent to our network, our data center in Seattle, and that data center is backed up with another data center in Phoenix, so we have, you know, nationwide connectivity from either one of those data centers so that we have complete redundancy, geographic redundancy, you know, across the entire country. And that cell site and sector information is delivered to our data center, and we use that information and map it against these 6,000 PSAPs. And basically, what we've done is we've taken each PSAP and we've put a geographic boundary map around it. And so any call that, you know, is mapped into that boundary is effectively going to get routed to that particular PSAP. So all of that, I don't know how familiar you are with, you know, call signaling, call processing information, but all of that is done with what's called SS7 messages.
Mm-hmm.
They're routed throughout the network.
Right, right. I'm vaguely familiar with it. Yeah, I know the term.
So effectively, when you set up a call, messages are used to communicate between the switch, you know, the origination switch and ultimately the destination switch to set up a voice path all the way through the network to get point A talking to point B. And what we did is we inserted ourselves into the middle of that communications path, that messaging path. So those messages actually get conveyed to us. And those messages do include information like the cell site and sector origination information of a call. And so with that information, we're able to establish the location of the caller at a gross level. And we then use that information to figure out the routing piece, which is, you know, the second step of the call. What happens next is the third step is we really want to get a more precise location fix of the caller because we want to provide as close a location fix as we possibly can. And so what we do is we then dip back into the network. We actually send messages back into the network to get that location information. In the case of a CDMA network like a Verizon or a Sprint, we actually send messages that ultimately end up going to the handset itself.
Mm-hmm.
And interact with the handset's GPS chip
mm-hmm.
and get the precise location of the handset and have it delivered back to us
right.
in real time. In the case of a singular or an AT&T, we interact with their systems that are either provided by Great Andrews Corporation or Andrew Corporation or TruePosition, which are effectively triangulation techniques,
right.
Triangulation systems.
Right.
And we'll extract, again, the information out of those systems in real time based upon the information that we get, you know, when the call starts. So what's happened is while the call is routing to the PSAP, we, in the background, simultaneously go and extract the precise location and store it. So we have that precise location stored in our data center. When the call arrives at the public safety answering point, what happens is the way the infrastructure, the E911 infrastructure was set up, is each public safety answering point, when their call center receives the call, it automatically takes the phone number and it uses that phone number as a database lookup key into a database that is usually managed by the local exchange carrier as part of their public safety service that they provide them, provide the PSAP. What we did is, for the case of the mobile, we replaced the mobile's phone number because, of course, that's not going to be found in a database. I mean, if I'm in D.C. and I live in Maryland, you know, my Maryland phone number is not going to be found as a valid street address.
Right.
So what we did is we replaced the Maryland phone number in this case with what looks like a valid landline D.C. phone number, so that when the public safety answering point does receive the call, it looks like it's coming from a D.C. landline phone. But what happens is when they then make the query, as they would normally, to get the street address from the local exchange carrier, that query goes to the local exchange carrier, and they realize, oh, that's one of those strange numbers. We call them emergency services routing keys. And so that strange number, instead of looking it up in their database because it's not going to be found, they instead send a message to us, to TCS, saying, here's that number, give us back the location information, and oh, by the way, give us the real phone number because we know this isn't the real phone number. And so we pass them back the real phone number because that way if the PSAP needs to call the person back, they can, because they'll have the real phone number of the caller.
But your middleware technology is installed at the carrier, not at the PSAP, right?
Yeah, the nice part is none of this requires the PSAP to upgrade, at least at this stage. There is a point where the PSAP did have to upgrade, and you know, they're going through upgrades now nationwide where we haven't. I think it's about 65% of the PSAPs have upgraded infrastructure. When they needed to go to precise location, because, you know, for example, let's say you're making a call from the middle of a field. Let's say your son's playing baseball and gets hit in the head with a baseball bat, right? I mean, there's an example there where, you know, ages ago, somebody would go try to find a payphone.
Right.
And that payphone would have a street address associated with it. Well, nowadays, 10 parents simultaneously can pull out their phones and dial 911.
Exactly.
It's going to work. And unfortunately, that baseball diamond doesn't have a street address associated with it.
Mm-hmm.
So what would happen as a result is in the precise location situation, you need to pass back a latitude-longitude coordinate. And the problem is the PSAPs weren't prepared to handle latitude and longitude. They had dumb terminals that were basically getting a street address back. And so in order to handle phase two E911, they actually had to upgrade their PSAPs, in that case, be able to handle a latitude longitude.
Right.
And what they did is they got these nice maps that would give them a "you are here" or "the caller is here," you know, little dot on the map. It would even give them a circle around the map that gave them a confidence level of what the accuracy of the call would be, because we can get an estimate from the system. So as a result, they will get a precise location, latitude, longitude on a map that shows up at the PSAP if it's been, you know, phase two enabled. And
right.
Like I said, about 65% of the PSAPs have upgraded to phase two around the country now.
Right.
So this was the only infrastructure change they needed. The carriers, of course, had to choose a location technology. And as I mentioned, the Sprint ones, the CDMA ones use selected GPS in the handset, whereas the GSM carriers typically went with a triangulation-based solution.
Right. But your location platform competes with somebody like an Autodesk Location Services or other. I know you guys bought Kivera a while ago.
Yes, and in fact, that was to deal with the Autodesk. When you look at location, I like to think of it as in four layers.
Mm-hmm.
The lowest layer is how do you get that precise location? And so that's a triangulation. navigation system or a GPS-enabled system. The companies that typically sell that, those kind of technologies are companies like True Position and Andrews in the triangulation world, and companies like SnapTrack, Qualcomm,
yep.
the GPS world, and Surf also does some of that.
Right.
We work with any of those companies. In fact, we resell and host some of the Qualcomm infrastructure to be able to support some of the CDMA carriers who don't want to deploy the technology themselves. They use us in a hosted environment to provide the location fix as well.
Hmm.
So we can provide an end-to-end solution by providing that lowest layer as well. The next layer is what's typically called the Mobile Positioning Center or GMLC, the Global Mobile Location Center,
mm-hmm.
GSM. And so, and those companies, we build those, that software, it typically handles things like privacy and billing and routing and, you know, all the, it interacts with the network infrastructure. Companies like OpenWave and ourselves are the main providers, also companies like Ericsson, some of the OEM, some of the, you know, the switching infrastructure guys provide these solutions as well, like Nokia and Ericsson. And, we're one of the leaders. In fact, we consider ourselves to be the leader because we have a number of firsts. We were the first company out there to do E911. We were the first company out there to provide, you know, a precise CDMA fix. We're the first company out there to do a precise UMTS fix. So, we've been pioneers in this layer of the architecture for years now. Now, as you go up the next layer, that's when you run into companies like Autodesk. That's called sometimes the location enablement server section, layer, where you really need, and there will typically be capabilities like mapping technologies, some levels of privacy are implemented, the ability to handle multiple applications. That layer effectively knows how to communicate between applications. And that's where Autodesk plays. We also have capabilities in that arena, especially with our acquisition of Kavera, because they have an incredibly powerful graphical information system engine that we were able to pick up as part of the business that we purchased. And we're now using that as part of our E911 infrastructure that is working extremely well for getting really high quality mapping fixes where you want to map the location to a street address, for example, that has been what's called MSAG validated. It's each one of the public safety entry points maintains a metropolitan street address guide, or MSAG. That happens like when a subdivision is built, you know, the county sort of parcels out the land and assigns an address for each one of these parcels.
Right.
That information is managed at the county level and is therefore part of sort of the public safety infrastructure.
Right.
And that information has to be updated on a regular basis. We receive those pieces of information, and we've used our graphical engine to be able to do a mapping between, you know, an address and these street address guides, and it's just worked out extremely well for us on the E911 front, where we get really high match rates as a result, much higher than is typically found out there in the industry.
Now, that location platform, that's your XY point platform?
Actually, the XY point is the piece below, the MPC piece, the piece that sits sort of talking to the network infrastructure to pull the location information out of the network in real time. So the Kavera piece sits on top of it, and then of course the fourth layer is applications themselves.
Right.
E911 is one, but you know the more common ones are things like fleet tracking. We have a handset locator application that we've just announced recently. We've got we partner with companies like Rand McNally for their Street Finder application, and we also have a traffic application that has a you know overlay of traffic information overlaid on top of the maps that we provide them. So all this value-added service, value-added content that you then tie to a specific location with maps is the piece that the application layer brings to the market. And so what we did is with the acquisition of Kavera, we now feel that we have a complete end-to-end solution. We can sell it in-network to carriers, which we did with Hutchison worldwide. We're deployed at about 7 of the Hutchison properties worldwide. And that's a UMTS 3G carrier, which you're probably familiar with.
Mm-hmm, right.
And then, of course, we also can host that technology, which we do for our E911 service, and also we can for commercial services as well. In fact, we're doing that now for Sprint, where Sprint is using us as a host location partner, where the actual end-to-end location technology is managed in our network operations center and data centers in Seattle. But then they have downloadable applications that run on the handsets themselves.
Okay.
So that's, you know, that's sort of the microcosm, macrocosm of the location world, which you live in, so you know pretty well.
Right.
And where we play in it. We feel like we're one of the few players that really plays all four layers and can play it in both a hosted scenario or in an in-network scenario.
Okay. Tell me a little bit about the MVNO market. That's I know one that you're beginning to play in, and more services are being rolled out. That seems to be the next big thing out there. And how do you see that market developing?
Well, we anticipated about 3 years ago, we saw the MVNO market coming to fruition, and we felt that this was really going to be an excellent opportunity for us because these were essentially wireless operators that needed to differentiate themselves in some particular way other than price. They typically were going to focus on a market demographic, hopefully a market demographic that they already sold to or had some market presence with. So a Disney and an ESPN, for example,
right,
had a market demographic that they already understood. Virgin Mobile, likewise, had a market demographic. Others like TracFone and Boost were trying to actually sell to a specific market demographic. In the case of TracFone, a prepaid base, and Boost, I think to some extent as well there, but a younger crowd essentially. Likewise, Virgin focused on I think they tend to focus on a 13 to 23-year-old range of customers, or 13 to 29-year-old range of customers. And so the MVNO, we think, is a very targeted wireless operator who is looking for the kinds of services we provide to differentiate themselves in the marketplace. What we have found is a lot of them are still trying to learn the ropes of how to do the marketing. So we do believe that we have what it takes for them to really differentiate themselves, but they also need to understand how to reach out to that market demographic and then, capitalize on what it is that they're recommended or recognized for already, and then bring that customer along for the experience, if you will.
Right.
Disney is starting to do that, and so we'll see how that ultimately plays out. If they can then take their child demographic and the parent who cares about the child, and then bring that across to the mobile world as well, so that they can actually be viewed as a one-stop shop for some of these kind of capabilities. You know, buy a phone, or for that matter, maybe get a phone while you're at the theme park.
Well, Disney's kind of latched on to the find your family member type of an application. I don't know, maybe they had too many people getting lost in Disney World or something.
Yeah, well, God knows we know that. It's that experience.
But
it's a smart play for them because the parent cares about knowing where the child is, and so an application like our handset locator is an excellent application to help both find the lost phone, because how many of us have kids who lose their phones?
Right.
Regular than we wish, and then also being able to find them. Where are they? Are they at the library? As we thought they were? Are they on their way home from school? There's different types of services that we think will be rolling out in the next couple of years. We call them zone-based monitoring. So, for example, I could actually have a path from school to home that I map out as being a safe zone. So as long as my child's phone is in that safe zone, I'm okay. But if my child's phone strays out of that safe zone, I would like to be alerted.
Yeah, that's the geofencing application.
Exactly.
That's how we were.
Geofencing, zone-based monitoring, exactly the same kinds of concepts.
Yeah.
And those have incredible business value. If you're a fleet, management service, if you're a trucking company and you really want to make sure that your guys are following the routes, and if they diverge from the route, if you're a government entity that's tracking biohazardous materials being transported and you want to make sure they're staying on route, there's a number of really powerful services that follow the zone monitoring concept. But we also think there's some very powerful consumer services, like the one I just mentioned on the family front, that would also have value. So I think the interesting thing, as you just mentioned earlier when we first started this call, it's hard to say who's driving the location world. Is it going to be the enterprise? Is it going to be the consumer? Because there are some very powerful services in both categories that have their own market drivers behind them and almost seem to be happening somewhat simultaneously. I think enterprise has gotten a little bit of a head start because of what Nextel has successfully done here in the United States. But the other carriers are moving so rapidly into the personal SIMs and the, you know, Milo devices that we're now seeing marketed out there, that I think we're going to see both, you know, being driven pretty rapidly here in the next, you know, 12 to 24 months.
Yeah, one of the applications that's an easy ROI sell is on the logistics end and, you know, the fleet tracking and that's an easy one. That's been, you know, happening for some time. I'm getting asked, you know, what's the next, you know, thing. Or although, to be honest, not all the fleet guys have bought into it. But there's a very easy ROIs to justify. For family, you know, I'm not sure they look at the cost so much as they kind of immediately see the value in knowing where people are.
Safety cells,
yeah, security is a big issue.
Right.
But I'm kind of curious as to what you see on the other application ends. I mean, you've introduced a couple of applications, the traffic being one. I mean, what are you seeing else out there in the market that is kind of maybe a next driver? Is there anything that's obvious that you see?
Well, we tend to categorize them into three areas. I like to think flowers when I think of applications because we tend to categorize them as FTD, find, track, and direct, give directions. And so the tracking application is sort of the middle one. It's one that can be used on a personal level, but tends to be more done as an enterprise-based application. And so you know that one pretty well. The find application, there's just a huge number of them. For example, we've gotten some recent interest in Fuel Finder, where you can find an app, you know, where's the cheapest gas station possibly, you know, in that carries your credit card, you know, that you can use your credit card at. You know, find an ATM that doesn't charge you a bank fee. You know, those have immediate ROI. I mean, you're going to use that once and you've saved yourself $2. So those are the kinds of applications that, you know, combining them together into a, you know, a find a point of interest application becomes very useful. The restaurant guide has been extremely interesting to a number of players, but I think it becomes more interesting when you get to 3G handsets where you actually can see, you know, where the nearest four-star restaurant, but now, you know, show me its menu, you know, show me its ambiance, you know, give me a picture of the inside, and then give me a map to, you know, where it's located. So these types of applications are only now starting to come available because the handsets are only now coming available with the capabilities to do this. The consumer is still very voice-driven, so they're only beginning to you know, view their handset as more than that, and I think, you know, BlackBerry's has certainly helped. The fact that 44% of the U.S. population uses SMS, it helps a lot because it means that people are looking at their phones and using them from a visual perspective, not just from a voice perspective.
Right.
And that's always been our mantra all along. We do text messaging as well. That's been a big part of our business. And our view, you know, wireless, as a company that focuses on wireless data, where text messaging and location are two, you know, big wireless data solutions, essentially, we feel that they complement them each other really well because both really encourage the user to look at the handset and interact with the handset as a data device rather than simply as a voice device. And being able to send maps to a device was really the next big step from text messaging. And of course, if you're going to send a map, then the "you are here" dot on that map is really, really important to establish the relevance to the user. And so our feeling was, in order to make those maps really relevant, we needed to have precise location. It couldn't just be a cell site sector because you really expect, if you're going to see a map, if you're going to get a map, you know, of, you know, you're here and here's the nearest four-star restaurant, you sort of expect you to be in the middle of the map. And with cell site sector, you still can't get that kind of precision. So we think that one of the reasons why Europe didn't succeed as well in some of these points of interest and find the nearest type of application is because they were relying on cell site sector, and the user experience was still, you know, if I'm not in the middle of this picture, then, you know, is it really finding me? And so now with precise location and, you know, being able to put a dot here, you are here, and then being able to show them a path for, by the way, if you're going to drive, here's the fastest route. If you're going to walk, here's the best route. Those kinds of value adds really enhance the value of the location fix and make people really understand that this device is finding me and it can be useful in a lot of different ways. So the defined applications we think are going to pick up a lot of steam in the next year because there's just so many of them. There's so many possibilities.
And very niche applications, very niche markets, you mean?
Exactly, and there's like hundreds of possibilities, but they all build off the same concept, a database of all the places that can be located and a map, you know, that you overlay it on. So with what we acquired from Kavera, you know, we can roll out literally hundreds of these different types of applications with very little effort. And so our focus has been on working with brand names who would want to bring their unique content to the application. And that's why, you know, Rand McNally, AAA, TeleAtlas, these are companies that we've been working with to, you know, bring these applications to market. And you know, more are coming that we'll be announcing here shortly as well. So, you know, we look for people who, for companies who have some brand that they're bringing to market, some content they're bringing with that brand, and then that's how they market it. And that ties right back to that MVNO question that you asked earlier, because a lot of those guys are going to be MVNOs.
But it doesn't. But it sounds like it doesn't even have to be the, you know, the broad companies that you just mentioned, Rand or TeleAtlas. It could actually be retail or consumer brand companies that have a particular stake in having their customers know location. Could be Coke, for that matter. Wants you to direct you to the nearest Coke machine.
It could be you know, Starbucks for the nearest Starbucks,
right.
McDonald's for the nearest McDonald's, Walmart for the nearest Walmart. I mean, you fill in the blank, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it could be any number of them where if you are in an area that you're not normally in, but you have something you typically buy from that particular store, where's the nearest one?
Sure.
And so there's a whole range of them. And then what we think what will happen is once you get to the find stage, you know, find the nearest retail outlet, then the next step is mobile advertising.
Right.
Because I can move to where's the nearest Starbucks? But what if I'm just, you know, find the nearest coffee and I have three different coffee, you know, show me a Seattle the best, a Dunkin' Donuts, and a Starbucks, and send me coupons for each one of them and I'll decide which one I want to go to.
Yep.
And so that's the natural next evolution from the find the nearest application. And we see that starting to happen as well. We've been talking to a number of companies who have been working to aggregate some of the retailers, because, of course, that's what you need. You need two things. You need to aggregate the retailers, and you have to have a nationwide footprint, because the retailers don't want to just work on Verizon phones, and, you know, they want to work on any phone. And so you need to be able to bring both. And the neat part is we can do both. Our network operations center and data center in Seattle is hooked up today to over 40 carriers around the country for 911 capabilities, and we can bring that same kind of connectivity into the commercial world, you know, and so that becomes a natural entree for any of those players who are out there, you know, aggregating retailers.
Right. So you really don't care who to work with at this point. I mean, it could be the carriers driving the application, or it could be the retailer themselves. You'll handle it either way.
From our experience, we think the carriers aren't really promoting the applications on their data decks that much. Sometimes they pick a particular application. So, you know, for example, Verizon's been advertising their Chaperone service lately. But I think more and more of them are looking toward the application provider to bring their brand and to drive, you know, the advertising of their brand. And so Rand McNally is expected to sort of bring their story. ESPN is expected to bring its story. Disney is expected to bring its story. And I think we'll start to see more and more of that over time, where, you know, a downloadable application, that's the other component that now is available, because a lot of these handsets can now download applications to them, and, you know, over the air. And so now, you know, advertising a magazine, you know, you get, let's say you get your Disney magazine to the house, and it mentions the fact that you can, you know, have an application that you can download to the handset. To the kids, it'll probably advertise, you know, some fun stuff, you know, where's the nearest, you know, park or skateboard, you know, park or you know, Tunes Place, you know, iTunes Place that you can hang out with your friends. To the parent, obviously, it would be an advertisement of, you know, a child tracker or, you know, a parent finder, that's a good one.
Well, you may need that too, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Actually, that's a good point. You know, where's mom and dad?
Where's mom and dad? Why aren't they here to pick me up, you know?
So we think that there's going to be, location is one of those horizontal technologies that's going to touch so many different possible applications that, you know, 3 years from now, this world is going to look hugely different than it does today.
Yeah. That's
think
you know, so many of the applications are going to be touched by location, and they're going to be part of the application, and we won't even think twice about them. You know, we dial 411 today to get a phone number. Tomorrow we'll dial 411 to get the nearest restaurant, and they'll send you. They'll happen to get our location because we dial 411. This is a service we already are working with InfoNX on. You know, so they dial 411. You get the location fixed. You ask them if they want, you know, maps and directions. You ask them if you want to. You know, they can set up a reservation for you, or they can send you the phone number so that you can set the reservation yourself. These concierge-type services, that's just a natural extension of what a company like InfoNXX wants to do with their 411 service, and here this location is a piece part of it.
Sure.
And that's going to happen in a lot of different services, we think, over time, where voice and data are going to be location-enabled in various ways. You know, you're going to get, nowadays I get a weather alert every day. Well, it would be nice to get the weather alerts that's particular to the city I happen to be in, because when I'm traveling, you know, my Baltimore weather alert isn't real helpful.
Sure. Everything will become a lot more localized.
Yeah. And we think that's one of the keys. That, you know, that the mobile device has always been a personal device. I mean, that's one of its real benefits. It's one of the reasons why we're giving them to our kids nowadays. And so having it personalized is one of the key items. We've seen how ringtones and wallpapers have been an incredibly successful business. Well, what's that all about? It's all about personalizing the device. It's all about making this mobile device a personal device for you. Well, what's more personal than your current location?
Sure. Yep.
And so it just adds and enhances the value of that device to you, and therefore can be used to, you know, where are my friends? You know, let's find a place to hang out. Okay, let's all go there, send a map to each other, you know, get directions on how to get there. Okay, when is Joey? Is Joey on his way? You know, I mean, all these things are things that kids are crazy about. And so it's just going to be a natural play. I mean, I envision not too far from now, MySpace is going to have little maps showing you where your friends are.
I hope so. I would suspect that that's a natural for them to do that.
Yeah. Now, privacy is going to be critical in all this, and that's why people like yourself are so important in getting that message out. Because, you know, we don't want to abuse privacy. At the same time, the last thing I want to do is have an internet predator be able to go to my spaces and find where my child is.
Yeah, no doubt. Yeah.
Well, there's this balance of who do I let know, you know, there's got to be an awareness, but there also has to be a level of control where a parent can control it, a person can control their own location, a child can control it, you know, within limits, obviously. You know, perhaps they can block where their friends see, but they can't necessarily block what their parents see. All of these things have to be talked through, worked through, made very clear, communicated very clearly so there are no surprises. You know, we don't want to have a bunch of lawsuits from the ACLU on all this stuff to slow the whole location technology down. That would be the last thing any of us want.
That wraps up another Directions Media podcast. You can reach us at directionsmag.com. Our music today is by Owen Barron. You can reach him at Barronworks, that's BAERNworks.com. We hope you'll join us for another podcast soon, and be sure to tell a friend.